Wisconsin is going back to work.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsinized summary of this week in the Capitol. It's the final week before the election, J.R. That's a good thing, I think.
Yeah.
It's been quite an election. Charles Franklin and MMU poll. Let's get it right. Among likely voters, 50% for Governor Walker, 43% Burke, 46% among registered voters, 45% for Burke. Walker's margin outside the margin of error. And the second time in this election cycle, he's hit the magic 50. Mm-hmm. But look beyond that. Is there a enthusiasm gap? 93% of Republicans say they're definitely going to vote, 82% of Democrats. And does this underscore the get out the vote? Was it a bad week, a bad poll for the governor, J.R.?
No, I mean, the Marquette poll has been caught in the, we all call it the golden standard, right, in Wisconsin these days. And there comes a little bit of a burden with that, if you will, in that whenever it comes out, shows something like this, people start picking it apart. So 2 weeks ago, when it had a dead even,
47-47.
Republicans complained to me that there was something off. There's no gender gap. This week, Democrats complained there's no way it's 7 points. Now, of course, this is before the whole fired, was she or wasn't she fired thing, but Dems, the likely voter screen is too stringent. If you relax it a bit, look at the registered voters, we're closer. It's a one-point race. If you allow more of our people in, you know, it gets to be a nitpicking, if you will, of the results. And then you look at Walker's body language the last couple weeks. He is not campaigning like a guy who's got a 7-point lead. He's campaigning like a guy who is fighting for his life and who is a little more defensive, a little more, I don't say prickly necessarily, but just kind of a little more on edge, if you will, than what we're used to seeing. And look at the whole exchange this past week about Chris Christie and the RGA.
Yep.
You know, he has to come in and we're going to let him. You know, not that I want the guy's help. Later on it was, oh, but he's my friend. So he, this weird kind of thing with the governor.
Politico put it this way, Governor Walker limping
yes.
towards 2016, the presidential question. Sorry to interrupt
yes.
you.
But so absolutely. So the poll was, it was good for him in a lot of ways because it shows he's up. And it's good in this way. Even if the poll is off, sometimes these polls can become a self-fulfilling prophecy, where if you're a swing voter who maybe were leaning toward Burke and you go, oh, okay, wait, well, he's up by 7 points, and oh, by the way, maybe she was fired, well, was it worth going out anymore? Should I just stay home? And so even if that poll's not on, and even Republicans tell me it's not a 7-point gap in their stuff, even if that poll's not on exactly, it may end up being on once the final numbers come in because it may have an impact on how turnout goes. And that's the fear of Democrats I talked to this week a little bit about that.
Well, okay, but let's talk about what I think was the most surprising story, the fear over, the debate over the three different explanations for why Mary Burke left Trek's Europe office. Fired, according to two former Trek
execs.
Downsized, according to her. And at other times, she said, hey, we grew the Trek Europe business from 3 to 50 million. I was burnt out. But the point is, JR, she spent very valuable closing argument time talking about this. Major loss?
Oh, absolutely.
Her?
And the foundation of Mary Burke's candidacy is that she's had success in the private sector, she helped build Trek. Therefore, she can walk into the governor's office on day one and help create jobs because she has that knowledge. If that's your foundation and you have questions about that foundation, A, with were you successful in your family business, and B, your jobs plan, was it or wasn't your own work, that's not helpful. Mary Burke's had two really bad moments in this campaign. This is one of them. The other was the jobs plan stuff and was it plagiarized. It's not helpful, if you will, for her at this point.
Okay, and she's going to close in the final days. They're both doing bus tours, right, going around the state.
The new ad for Mary Burke this morning has got Bill Clinton.
Bill Clinton,
about,
making
a pitch for her. I mean, he's a popular former president saying that if you're ready for somebody who does all these great things, you're ready for Mary Burke. You know, it's kind of an interesting ad.
I often wondered whether Hillary would come in the final days for, but I think Bill is the surrogate for that, right?
Would have been a fascinating kind of setup of possible 2016 candidates with Hillary and Scott in the same state. So.
Yes.
Yes, never materialized.
Okay. Meanwhile, I asked the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign to do the math. How much had Governor Walker raised 2010, 2012 recall, and so far through October 20th? $77.3 million. That's the governor that raised the most. That's 4.5 times what Governor Jim Doyle raised. Doyle for two terms, $16.5 million. That's a big number, isn't it, JR?
Yes, and it's a big number because they try to recall Scott Walker. I mean, by going after Scott Walker with the recall election, he became a national figure,
right.
Created a national fundraising network. Jim Doyle, Tommy Thompson, you cover those races. People thought that they were big fundraisers, but they were mostly kind of in-state or a handful of out-of-state big donors. Scott Walker is a machine when it comes to fundraising and has a national network. That is really unusual in Wisconsin politicians. Tammy Baldwin has one a bit, but nobody, Paul Ryan has one,
mm-hmm.
but nobody else that I've seen in Wisconsin can say that, yeah, I can go raise money anywhere and do it in big, you know, hand over fist. And a lot of it is direct mail. I mean, you look at Walker's campaign finance reports, he spends a lot of money on mail. The reason I've been told he does that is he sends out mail a lot to these small donors, builds up a list, and then they kind of keep hitting him up for 50, 100 bucks at a time, and it keeps rolling in. And oh, by the way, if he runs for president in 2016, which Tuesday's going to have a big factor in that, you know, that's a great foundation to have to run for president,
all
to have a
names,
national network.
All yeah. those names in the database. Well, you talk about Doyle and Thompson. Doyle raised an average of $8 million a year, and Tommy, in his last campaign, 1998, he spent $6.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
So Tommy, $6.5 million in the last campaign, Doyle average of $8 million. And the governor in the recall, $37.4 million to keep his job.
And look at Mary Burke. She has raised $15.2 million roughly. That includes $5 million of her own money, but take that out. She raised $10 million in a year, a little more than a year and 1 month. That is normally a pretty good number, but Walker's not a normal candidate. It's not a normal election to run against him.
Well, let's talk about Burke loaning her campaign or staking her campaign with $5 million. Now, that's not a record, because Herb Cole would spend a lot more than that to get elected.
Ron Johnson put $9 million of money in for the Senate
right.
campaign 4 years ago.
Right. Burke said, though, that she had to commit some amount of her own personal wealth to stay competitive, correct?
Well, if you look at, it depends what window you look at, but if you count from July 1 of 2012, which is after the recall election, to October and include the late contribution reports,
mm-hmm.
Walker's raised $30 million in that period. That's a lot of money again. That's 2-1. Even with her $5 million, that's a 2-1 advantage for the governor. Now, one interesting thing is we're not seeing a huge Walker advantage on the airwaves. Now, governor likes to say he's being outspent, which is based off numbers on broadcast TV that don't catch her cable. When we've looked at cable buys, Republicans have a bigger presence there than Democrats do.
Okay.
So I haven't got a good number yet of what the exact fund rate number spent, or what's been spent, but in the recall, Walker just absolutely drenched Tom Barrett. That was his big advantage. We're not seeing that, and that's part of why people tell me the governor's a little more kind of on edge, because he's not enjoying that huge advantage. It's much more of a much tougher race than what they had a few years ago. And big question is, why is that? Well, the Club for Growth is not running TV ads this year. Now, WMC is, RGA is, but that conservative coalition that we're used to seeing, that we saw during the recall, isn't kind of firing on all cylinders this time. And why? Is it because of John Doe investigation? Are they just pumping money into other groups to spend it, or what's going on? You know, it's hard to track those things because they're not reporting stuff to the state.
But WMC is very active in the Baumhack versus Mark line.
Oh, yeah.
Let's come back to the numbers on the Mary Burke campaign. I just want to be sure I have them right. She has raised about $15 million,
yes.
One-third of which is her own money.
Yes.
Okay. Another fascinating thing. When you look up how dependent the Democrats are, Mary Burke on down, on Dane and Milwaukee counties, I looked it up. 35% of the Democratic vote cast statewide in the 2010 election for governor, 2012 Walker recall, and 2012 presidential election come just from those two counties.
Yeah.
More than one in three. So it's a turnout, and that explains why Michelle Obama, President Clinton et al. Came into the city of Milwaukee, right?
President Obama's there on Tuesday. I mean, absolutely, that's all about turnout. Now, what's interesting about that is, if you think about it, it's great they've had those turnout machines in Dana Milwaukee counties. It is not great for them that they've started to neglect outstate, which is why you see legislative candidates struggling more than what you used to. I mean, one, the maps are not as good as they used to be for Democrats.
True.
But two, they're not turning out people like they used to in some of these more rural areas. They've done a better job this year of finding candidates who kind of match a district. But in 2012, remember, President Obama won the state by, what, 5 percentage points, whatever it was, and they didn't pick up seats in the assembly. You know, why? Well, they had a combination of not great candidates and bad maps, and among other things, you know, lack of money, that kind of stuff. So it's an interesting split you're seeing, where it's Dems are all about Milwaukee and Madison, but that's the states, that's their issue. They have to do better outstate especially midterm elections.
What are you hearing about the city of Milwaukee? I talked to Representative Evan Goyke. He said, I'm doing all I can to get our people to the polls. What are you hearing?
They feel pretty good. Dane County feels pretty about its turnout. But at the same time, Governor Walker looks like he's going to do well in the Fox Valley. So if you're a Democrat, you're basing your math to win a statewide election anymore is drive up the turnout in Dane and Milwaukee counties and hold serve in the Fox Valley. If you go back and look at 2012, Barack Obama, I think, was almost even with Mitt Romney, maybe down a point or two. Same with Tammy Baldwin. As soon as I saw that number election night 2 years ago, I went, okay, this is over in Wisconsin for Tommy Thompson, because you have to be, if you're a Republican, up there in kind of the low to mid-50s in Brown County to win. Otherwise, you can't. So for Democrats, it's drive it up here, hold serve in the Fox Valley, and then outstate, you kind of do okay, and you're going to be in good shape. Flip side is Walker. Hey, the Fox Valley can help him combat. The Fox Valley and the suburbs of Milwaukee can help combat the advantage in Dana-Milwaukee County.
Which is why another thing I did is I took a look at where the Walker comeback bus went the last week. And well, you've got the chart in front of you. I mean, and so will the viewers. He stays completely away. The closest he gets to Milwaukee is the suburban, the Sussex. Yeah. And he stays away from Dane County. And twice to Green Bay, twice to the Schofields, Hudson's. So that's just exactly what you were talking about, right?
Yeah. If you look at the state, there are a couple of parts where things are getting better for Republicans, kind of like around the Wausau area. I mean, when I first got here 14 years ago, that was decently Democratic area, right?
Which is why you're there twice.
It's getting more Republican.
Recently.
You go over to Sheboygan, that was a swing seat when I first got here. Now it's pretty Republican. But otherwise, a lot of places are trending more Democrat. And Hudson, like the St. Croix County, that's getting more
suburban.
Republican.
Suburban. All right?
So those are your spots where it's going away from Democrats. A lot of other places, southwestern Wisconsin, they're getting much better for Democrats. So you've got to get this kind of these islands, if you will, of partisanship. And Walker's hitting his islands. You know, that's the place to go to try and drive up his turnout. And, oh, by the way, combat Milwaukee and Madison.
Well, and with Chris Christie, and we can debate, you know, Christie shouted down somebody in a public appearance this week. I mean, it's just really intriguing. And Haley Barbour joins him today.
Yes.
Haley Barbour and Chris Christie. But I was into history this week, so I looked it up. 11 elections for governor. 7 of them have been won by the GOP, only 4 Democrats. But when you go to the U.S. Senate, the record is over that, and I'm looking back over 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
40 years, U.S. Senate elections in Wisconsin, Democrats have won 10 of the 13 elections. Does that speak to our ability to split tickets or what?
Well, it speaks to a couple. One, midterm elections are much different than presidential elections in Wisconsin. And I think if you go back,
that's right. How we elect times, governors in midterm elections.
How many times in midterms have we had a U.S. Senate race? 2010, Republicans won. 1998, Russ Feingold fought against the tide. Remember, he won when Tommy Thompson won. That's a rarity, by the way, to have a split like that top of the ticket. But we used to have the reputation. 98 is a good example. But look at 2010 and 2012. Governor Walker and Ron Johnson were really pretty close in the final vote tally, even though Russ Feingold was obviously a much higher profile guy than Tom Barrett. Been around for much longer, better resources, those kinds of things. It would not be much of a difference. Go to 2012, Barack Obama and Tammy Baldwin. It was in a couple of, you know, I can't remember how many thousands of votes, but it wasn't a huge margin, even though Tommy Thompson was this well-known figure, been around Wisconsin forever. I mean, I get the impression that we are losing that split ticket voting thing. Now, go down southwestern Wisconsin, you may still see it there. There's that Senate race down there where Pat Baumhack and Howard Markline are running, and there's a sense that Markline's in pretty good shape, even though Burke should do well there. But go where else do you find a lot of split-ticket voting? I don't sense it. We're more and more partisan. And then, oh, by the way, the AG's race, that's a big question, too. Will it be a mirror of the governor's race, or will people actually say, no, I'm not sure about who I like, so I'm going to go ahead and have a check and balance, if you will, in the AG's? I don't know if people think like that way anymore.
And according to the Franken poll, it's still a toss-up for AG, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing that after all these ads, almost nobody knows who they
are. Right.
43-30, on whatever it was, but three-fourths don't know who these people, they don't have an opinion on those. That's amazing to people.
You mentioned Feingold. If you had to bet, does he try to reclaim his Senate seat running against Johnson in 2016?
I have Democrats who tell me every time I ask that, yes, he will, and Democrats tell me that they don't see it. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me at all if he comes back. It's just tough to kind of predict Russ Feingold, because Russ Feingold is Russ Feingold.
Yes,
you know,
he is. It's all about Russ Feingold.
He's not on anybody else's timeline. He's on his own timeline. So you would think if he's going to run, he needs to be back in Wisconsin early in 2015, get organized. But nobody's going to put Russ Feingold in a box and say, you have to do this, you have to do that.
It'll be Russ's call.
And if he doesn't run, Ron Kind is already made clear.
Oh, yeah.
Other names are going to float, but Ron Johnson is one of the number one targets in 2016 for Senate Dems.
Yeah. So I never will forget the day that Ron Kind told me at a convention, 2016, my sons will be out of high school by then. That's another way of saying I'm all in, unless Russ runs. One final history note, 36 years, that's how long it's been since someone who has not held elective state office has been elected governor. That was Lee Sherman Dreyfus, then Chancellor UW-Stevens Point. Mm-hmm. The five governors since then, Tony Earle, Tommy Thompson, Scott McCallum, Jim Doyle, Scott Walker, served in the ledge as lieutenant governor or attorney general. J.R., what intrinsic advantages do you have if you already hold state office when you want to move up the ladder?
You've had experience in debate. You've had experience in the campaign trail. You've had questions thrown at you that you weren't expecting. You know how to kind of sidestep them. One of the bad moments for Mary Burke in this campaign was, how do you define plagiarism? Mm-hmm. And she stumbled for a question. There's a question of how well was she prepared for that question by her staff? Obviously not very well. And then B, if you're somebody who's used to that kind of stuff, you know how to kind of walk around that question. That's a sign of her inexperience. Now, it's difficult for anybody to come off the street and run for statewide office, but if you have that experience from the legislature, from being in a campaign before, you've been battle tested. Governor Walker, he's much, much smoother on the campaign trail than Mary Burke because he's done this entire adult life. It's what second nature to him.
Since 1993, he's held elective state or county exec office.
Yeah. But well, there have been times when he's been caught in a difficult situation with a question, and he always walks his way out of it and as an answer, and you can push him on his answer and he will stick to his message no matter what. He's very disciplined that way.
Well, just to pursue this a little more, Eric Hovde didn't do too well. Mm-mm. Private businessman. Mark Newman, yeah, elected to
House.
The House, but then he ran for governor, ran for U.S. Senate, didn't do very well. How do you explain then Ron Johnson? No previous elected experience. He's a U.S. Senator.
He caught a great wave and had a great message. He was the right candidate at the right time to run that race. But then look at what's happened since then, and he's the most vulnerable, one of the most vulnerable Republicans in 2016 if you look at the map. And he struggled at times with the day-to-day stuff of being constituent relations, of knowing how to work, you know, your back home. Those are complaints you hear about Ron Johnson, is he's not worried about home back enough. He's not doing enough for constituent relations. He's not tending the farm, if you will. And that will be a vulnerability for him in 2016 if he doesn't get that turned around.
Okay. Well, time for What's Politics stock report, sir.
So rising political parties, and it kind of is insider baseball, but look at those court decisions that have happened the last few months. We took out the $10,000 limit on contributions per year, per donor.
Right.
We took out the limit on PACs. The combined impact is there are no limits on how much you can give a political party right now and how much that party can give to a candidate. We looked at the campaign finance reports for Burke and Walker this week. We just took the top dozen or so donors from both parties. Mm-hmm. The top 13 in the Republican Party of Wisconsin had all maxed out to Walker and gave the party $2.5
million. $2.5
million
from 13 contributors.
Turned around, gave him $1.7 million, I think it was, between straight donations and in-kind contributions.
Okay.
Mary Burke, top 12 donors of the Democratic Party, eight of them combined to give, had maxed out to her, gave like $1.5 million to the party, which then turned around and gave her like a couple hundred thousand dollars plus $500,000 or whatever it was in kind contributions for males. It shows you the rising power of political parties in this new landscape we have.
Yeah.
Before, if you were a donor, you maxed out to your candidate. You had to go to, if you want to give more, you had to go to an outside group, you know, like a third party that ran the issue ads because they weren't regulated, they weren't reportable, so you were okay to give more money. Well, now you can go to a safer bet, if you will, an organization that will more manage the message the way that you want.
Right.
And the parties are going to be a big part. Now, if you're a critic of this stuff, it's a pass-through. It's a way around campaign finance limits where you just give them, hey, here's $1 million, by the way, from one donor of the Republican Party, one of the Democratic Party. Go spend it to help Scott Walker and Mary Burke. It's to them, it's the flood of money. But the money's already been there. It's just where it's going now might change. Now, the big question is, does that stick around next session when
they're
going to
campaign finance? That's right. Is this a one cycle flash?
Yes.
That's fascinating. The reemergence of the parties. It's pretty interesting because you and I have watched the parties diminish as power brokers, as you say, elected candidates. They're on their own.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, mixed.
The AG race. So if you're watching,
okay.
If you're watching these ads, what's the one message you have? Sex offenders are going to get off easy, whoever's elected AG, right? I mean, that's like the one message that's come through on TV. Nobody knows who they are. Schimmel had a slight advantage. If you watch the debate from Wednesday night, he was on the attack more than Happ was.
Yeah.
If he's ahead, why? Well, there are a couple reasons I was given. One, maybe he's not really that ahead. And two, because people know who they are, maybe he has to try and define her more. You know, they need these shots to try and knock each other down. More groups are coming in. There's a new ad running, I think, up in Green Bay that's going after Happ. Schimmel's got some hard-hitting ads on Happ.
He does. He just started them. Boy,
yes.
They are very...
He won't hand them over, by the way, so we can post them in AdWatch. But, yes, he's running
them. He
won't
hand them over? Okay.
No. So it's getting nasty. And the question, again, is will it be a reflection of the governor's race where Walker hits X and that's the number that Schimmel gets? Or is it Walker hits X and Happ hits Y or vice versa because they want to have a check on whoever's going to be governor in the next cycle? That's a huge question. But I don't think that they are personally driving this train come Tuesday. They're being pulled along.
And then falling?
Mary Burke, again, the two really
bad
moments in her campaign have been the plagiarism stuff and now this. There are a couple things going on. One, you have the foundation of her campaign being questioned. Now, the story, is it fair? People have been debating that since it came out. Is it a dirty trick? That's what Democrats say. Is it a lackadaisical media that hasn't done its job and vetted her properly? That's what Republicans say, but it's out there. And she has to deal with it. So the closing argument is not about positive stuff. It's these guys are liars. They have an axe to grind. It's not that we want to spend the last week. This poll showing her down 50 to 43, again, does that dispirit some of your base? And she's run a good campaign in many ways, but been, at times, an inexperienced candidate. It's what you would assume for a first-timer.
For a first-time.
So she's had some difficulties. The problem is this. Anybody who walks into Oregon's Governor Walker comes in with 45% almost as a foundation, which is, for a normal candidate, that's awesome. I mean, you would almost jump at that as a challenger. But how do you go from 45 to 50 plus one? And if you look at the Marquette poll, it's been going in Walker's direction. There's that one blip where it was even,
yes.
And it's back to him. So does that mean he does, even if that margin is too high, does he have some kind of an advantage? And how does she go from, let's say she's at 47, let's say that's her number. How do you go from 47 to 50 plus one in a week? You know, what does she do to inspire Democrats, to inspire swing voters to say, you know what, I'm going for her. She had an opportunity, but this doesn't help.
There was also that subtle nuance in the Franklin poll that her favorables and unfavorables had
upside down for
upside
the first
down.
Time.
You
know,
upside down.
A good chunk. You know, so that's, you add it all together, and it's a difficult, it's not saying she can't win or she won't win, but it is a much more, if she had not had these two blips, she had momentum until the plagiarism stuff happened. Democrats told me she was getting it back. They feel like their polling had it within a couple of points even this week, unlike the Marquette poll. But what does this do with the were you fired stuff? How does that impact things? It's tough to say as we're in the weeds right now.
Yeah.
I wish I had another poll out on Monday to know for sure.
Yes.
But it's not helpful, and that's the bottom line.
But it's been an amazing election year, hasn't it?
Absolutely.
That's right. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And we want to talk about noon on Wednesday. We're going to be interviewing former Governor Thompson, former Speaker Loftus, discuss what happened on Tuesday, noon Wednesday in the Senate parlor. Please join us. Thank you.